This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is, as every guest, somebody wonderful. Today's guest is somebody you're going to know because she has probably been on your television screen in your home countless, countless times. Her name is Diane Amos. She is a comedian, an actress, and I'm going to go right to you and tell us how you knew who you were and at what age. How did you first know?
I was probably about 4 years old.
And you knew what?
And I knew that I would be an actress.
Why?
Because that's all I wanted to do. When I watched television, I watched with complete rapture over just the semantics of it. Like, you know, the acting part, it intrigued me even at that age. Just, you know, how they played to camera, the things they did, movie star kissing, you know, all the hand gestures they did. I understood blocking. I mean, this made sense to me.
At four?
Yes.
Now, can you say how that made sense to you? I mean, how did you see?
Because I saw it as a production. I'm from a very talented family. I have an uncle who's a musician, and I just have a lot of people around me at that time who were performing. But they, not necessarily on television, but I understood performance and that when they were rehearsing.
So it was natural to you.
Absolutely. They're rehearsing in our living room. I knew that when that went to the show, that was a different thing.
Okay.
So when I watched television or movies or anything, I thought about like what it was like to rehearse and to get it perfect and to be on TV. That made sense to me at that age.
What was your first job? Or what was your first, I shouldn't say that, what was your first performance? Because maybe that was at home.
Oh, absolutely. I charged my mom's friends nickels and quarters and dimes, whatever they had, for my shows that I put on. I would put on
a show.
Did
you get friends, neighborhood children, or just are
just
you
what was in our house. Whoever was in our house was privy to any shows that I happened to be doing that day or that week. And I would do dance shows, singing shows. I'd have a few friends in my neighborhood that were like-minded and that they liked performing. And we would put on all kinds of skits. I would imitate my mom's friends, which just floored her when she figured out after they left that I could do her friends.
But did her friends know it as you were doing it? Or
They eventually found out because I probably only did it two or three times before my mom before she said, watch this.
Put the lid on that?
No. Oh. She was totally intrigued. She could not believe the way that I mimicked them. So at some point, I ended up doing all of them at parties.
Wonderful. just talk a little bit about how life went after that. So you were encouraged right away. It's not like you had roadblocks then.
I really did not have roadblocks. As a matter of fact, I think I had, if nothing else, this great push. One of our old family friends that we're still friends talks about how they would be dressed to go out for the evening, and I would start putting on my show, and they would actually just stop, make their little drinks, get hors d'oeuvres, and watch my show instead of going out.
Oh, so you have a double good blessing. You not only were encouraged to do it, but you were a success right away.
Right away.
So you didn't know having to talk people into come see.
No, never even was a problem.
So how did that propel you, that knowing that you were a success for me?
Well, it just made me, in school, I took everything, you know, singing and choir, drama, all of that. I mean, that's what I did. And my mom was a teacher. And
what
so,
did she teach?
She was a special ed teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I had to keep my grades good or I couldn't do my passion. So my grades were always good so that I could perform. That was my whole goal.
So what was your first performance that was not in your living room?
Oh, elementary school, Lafayette, over out in the avenues. Mm-hmm. Whatever plays they were doing, I did them.
So you were just an easy natural all along.
And choir, yeah. As a matter of fact, I probably thought I was going to be a singer more than an actress at first. Mm-hmm. But then my passion got a hold of me, and a couple of teachers in high school were saying, she's a singer, she's an actress, she's a singer, and so they came and watched.
Do you remember the names of these teachers?
Absolutely. Mrs. Louise McKernan was my music teacher, also Johnny Mathis' music teacher, just an amazing woman. And Mary Edocides at Washington High School. I took her improv class, which was an accident. I didn't mean to take that class, but it changed my entire life and started me professional at 15.
Okay, so what was your first professional?
We had a group called Natural Acts, and we played at St. John's on Arguello, right across from Temple Emmanuel. There's a little... there's a wonderful preschool that they had in the back there, and a childcare, and they had a stage and everything, so that's where I started performing, was right there.
Do you remember what your first one was? You must.
Oh, it's an improv skit, so no.
Oh, I
that's
see
impossible to remember.
Oh,
it was an improv group.
So what was your first professional acting...
First
movies or TV?
The first commercial I ever did was a commercial for Don Blue in the morning radio show. And my first voiceover was for United Way. Mm-hmm. And so those are the first two things that really put me out there. And I found, my agents found me actually watching me perform in a group called National Theater of the Deranged that ran for 14 years here. And we were the number one group for all that time.
What is that? National Theater of the Deranged
was an improv
group. Sounds
like
someplace that would have a huge membership.
No, there's probably like anywhere from 7 to 10 of us at any time performing. Mm-hmm. Started by a lovely man here named Jim Crana, big on the scene here. And he started that group, asked me to be in it first.
What did you do? I mean, what kind of...
Oh, we took news headlines and improvised on them throughout the night, which set us apart from other groups because a lot of them just play games and do that kind of thing, whereas we had content. Mm-hmm. We had the audience reading the paper and trying to figure out what to, you know, have be ready for us and to stump us, and they would look in little places and find articles they think we didn't know about and blah, blah, blah. But between that many people, someone will know something. And yes. If you don't, we improvise, correct?
Uh-huh. Wonderful. So yeah. So that's kind of a history lesson also. I mean,
yeah.
You're doing a valuable service. You're mm-hmm. not just making people laugh. You're
yeah, it was people. Really, it was great. And there was, you know, there's always so much going on in the news. So, yeah.
So when did you, can we get to Pine Sol, the Pine
sure.
Sol Lady? Which is, I must say, I told you this before, it took me forever to realize you were an actress.
Ah, that's
which
so interesting.
Which is so perfect because when you can see too much acting.
I smell acting. That,
mm-hmm,
never
not
good,
so good,
right?
And I thought you were just that wonderful lady who helped people along as they couldn't make their decision in the markets. Even though, so how did you come to that?
One of my biggest fans for in the National Theater Ranch, an audience member, was named Ben White. He has since passed, rest his soul. He decided to, he was the main writer on this. I guess Pine Sol had been very popular for many years and needed
as
really,
a product.
As a product.
Yeah.
But they had just slipped a little bit. There were other cleaners that were starting to really aggressively advertise, and they realized they had to do something. So they started a campaign. I don't know if they knew they were looking for a spokesperson, but they knew they needed to start a big campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And he, the writer, said, you know, can you just start with Diane Amos? That's the only pool we have. Can you start with her? And so they did. And we shot one. They really liked me, brought me back. We shot one full up with voiceover and, you know, grocery store setting. And then they tested, and it tested great. They went nationwide and came back to me. It was about 3 months later.
Because you're so trustable looking.
You know what?
What
they,
do you think?
Absolutely.
That.
No,
asking.
That's no. You're right. You're absolutely right. And I think what was really the truth is that I look like I mop and I look like I clean. I look like a housewife as opposed to someone in a chiffon dress. We know that women in a chiffon dress did not mop that floor, right? You just know that.
Yeah.
But with me, I think people really just identified. Well, they don't see anyone like me quite on television anyway doing that kind of service, and so I think it was absolute believability. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's
yeah.
it.
Those were so effective. Are they still running? I don't.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
this is my 20-year anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent.
This month, October.
Okay, mm-hmm. People, keep an eye out for the Pine Sol Lady. If, I'm sure you all know her. Tell me about your first movie, for example. When did you?
Angels in the Outfield. And I was
when
hired.
Was that?
Oh, my goodness. When was that? You're going to test me here.
Just around.
Must have been 80,
yeah.
late
80s. Okay, I think 80s, yes.
Maybe early 90s.
So who were you working with there, and how did you come to that?
I came to that just auditioning. The first agent that came to me said, I want to be your agent. That was Joan Spangler over at Look. And she started sending me out on things, and I got that. Danny Glover was in that. And it was an amazing movie, and I was hired as a specialized extra, which meant that in a crowd, because they had school children come and all kinds of people like that, they wanted someone who's an actress who's focused on what needs to be done in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was me, and I had one line, which is what gets you residuals, which is great. And that was the first thing I ever did.
And after that,
they kind of start rolling in.
Like, why don't you let
9 months, Copycat.
And we can get all these on Netflix.
Yes, oh, definitely. And it just became this wonderful new thing that I was doing. And I felt totally prepared for it because that's all I've ever wanted to do was be an actress. So
you're so lucky.
Fit in. I realize
yes,
that.
Really. And everyone was
work.
On your side.
That's right. Right.
Double lucky.
I know. Good
right.
stuff. Huh?
Okay. So no challenges. That's
well.
But,
yeah. I think. Well, let's be real.
Okay.
The biggest challenge that I have would be being black, mm-hmm. a large woman, braids, the body type that I have. I had pretty gap teeth when I first started.
Oh, I was going to say I don't see. But everything else that you're describing about you is absolutely what is chic today.
Yes, today. But back then, you know, it had its challenges only because, you know, I'm a lot of things that they say a spokesperson isn't.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Oh, because they want, like...
Well, I mean, it's just...
Gwyneth Paltrow?
What we're used to looking at, but not even stars so much. Stars are doing more television commercials now.
Right.
Back then, hardly any. And commercial actresses were kind of, you know, we don't want to do commercials.
See, that's interesting because
there was quite a stigma.
Well, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, there used to be a stigma also that Broadway people wouldn't do movies.
Right.
And movie people wouldn't do television.
It's all crossover now.
I mean, it was
now. So
looking down.
Yeah.
It's all crossover now because the money's good and the talent is still required.
Yeah, and you know, it takes it's a different actress that can do, you know, commercials, you know, and film and stand up and all the things I do. So I'm well rounded that way because I'm a Libra. I like all that stuff. I like juggling all those kinds of things. So when I would go on set, like to my first movie, whatever, I paid attention to what was going on.
Oh, yes,
on,
you look
what
like
the stars were doing,
yes, you look
what
very,
the tech people were doing. Like, uh-huh. I wanted to know what that world meant. Uh-huh. And I had some good, you know, people to watch. I was on set with Robin Williams and, you know, a lot of Paul Newman. And so I really got to see what a professional set can be like.
Now, I have just a thought, mm-hmm. because I remember, I mean, years ago, years and years, decades ago, being aware that a good commercial was a perfect 60-second drama.
Yeah, that's right.
And why wouldn't that just attract? Well, it does now, I guess. I mean,
well, I think there were a couple of things. Probably maybe pay scale being different, wanting to go for thinking that a movie career or just television actor, whatever it be, you know, more substantial. But there's an art to making
but
something believable
so
in 60, 30, or 15 seconds.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of thing.
Do you have favorites?
Favorite
commercials?
that I've done, you mean, like over the years? What do you
mean? No, just in general.
Oh my goodness! There's always commercials that I like.
Dr. Pepper used to have great ones.
Yeah, and some of the milk commercials.
Yes.
I mean the big Newton, you know, way back then and up to date. I like some of the more emotional commercials on television that happened with, you know, like I remember there's this one with the little girl. And her father picks her up, and she's just talking. She's probably six, and she's talking. He's going, yeah. And he goes around, you know, puts her in, closes the door, comes around. She's still talking, never stop. He opens the door. And there's those kind of moments that can get, and emotions that can happen in commercials that I really enjoy.
Yes.
Be they funny or whatever. I just really enjoy it when there's something that makes you leave laughing or like, oh, you know.
Oh, I agree.
And when it can be done in 15, 30, or 60 seconds, that's a good thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think it's a real art to writing those, too.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you want to do now? I mean, maybe more
ahead.
Of what you're doing, of
absolutely
course,
more of what I'm doing.
Is there anything else that you're...
Yeah, I want more film because there's something about that. I'm in Woody Allen's new film right now, Blue Jasmine. And the good thing about that kind of audition is that, you know, they tell you that Mr. Allen picks his own talent. And so when you get picked for something like that and you know that he was looking, it just keeps you positive in terms of, you know, still being relevant and powerful on screen and in auditions because those are the bane of any actor's audition. You know, auditions are hard. And
how
so
are they
you have
hardest?
To do that. Because you go in.
Artificial?
Well, no. You study your lines. You have what you think is important in that script, what the director thinks is important in that script, what the person auditioning you thinking is important. So you have to read the room, read the script correctly, and go in with your full self. And, you know, sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, but you always have to go in knowing that it's possible to have this part. Right?
There was a line, which I just saw recently in Tootsie,
mm-hmm.
where Dustin Hoffman
mm-hmm.
is making a huge fuss
mm-hmm.
in this as Tootsie.
Mm-hmm.
And the director says, was that for real? Or was that for real? Or were you reading the lines? And he said, which answer will get me the audition?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
It's
so
reading the room many
yeah.
times over. Exactly.
Now,
exactly.
Do you have family here?
I do. I have a husband that I've been with. We've been together 25 years, married almost 23. I have a son who's 28 and a daughter who's 16.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. A cousin's here and a sister, yeah.
Are they going to be your children interested in going in the same direction?
Well, interestingly enough, I think my daughter might be. She's more of the model type, very lithe and very pretty. My husband's half Mexican, half Italian, so she's got this incredibly gorgeous, unique look. So I think they're more photography-oriented, like mm-hmm. in front of the camera.
Both of them?
My son's really, really handsome, and I think that he loves being in front of the camera. They haven't pursued it that much, although they both have agents that are kind of waiting for them to be at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But as a person who was really wanting to do that at four, I know not to push that.
Yes.
It makes a difference when a child wants to do acting and when the parent wants a child to do acting.
Oh, you know, I have a feeling.
Oh, my goodness. So.
Well, it must make a difference in emotional health also.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
So they know that the opportunity is there. And my daughter, as she gets a little bit older, she's kind of starting to think that way. So I think maybe this summer we'll do a little push with her. But, you know, they have other interests, too. My son loves electronics and, you know, things with his hands, which is totally not my forte. I don't even want to plug anything in. So they're very in touch with who they are, too. And my mm-hmm. daughter likes to dance. And so, you know, we pay attention to that first.
Nice. And what else Well, what else do you do in your life? That's a ridiculous question because I know you're busy full time.
Just getting back one second to other things I want to do. I really love to public speak.
Oh, that's what I want to know. When I say what else?
I did a 4-year run with Pine Sol doing some speeches for a program we called Sister Speak, which is an Ebby magazine. There's a column called Sister Speak. So we took that live, basically, and went to 4 cities a year, and it was astounding and wonderful.
Tell me about what that involved.
I spoke on sisterhood and what it means to be a woman in society and how we need to compete with each other, but how we get labeled and we're mean to each other as opposed to, there's nothing wrong with competition, but there's something very wrong with stepping on someone else to get someplace.
So how do you define competition then?
I find
in its good sense.
In its good sense. 6 actresses walk into a room, 1 gets the part. Boom. It's that simple.
Or is that painful when you're not the one? Or is it just something you learn
because
from it?
Because you learn early on, it takes 40 auditions to get 1 yes.
Oh.
So if you go into that knowing that, then you shouldn't have a problem. You can't be thin-skinned in this business, and that
I'm
not.
That's what
I'm asking. Yeah, you really have to understand that there's so many reasons why you didn't get a part and so many reasons why you do get a part, that you just go in every time and do your best and see if you get the part.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think about it much after I audition. I hope I did the best. I put a good thought to it, a little prayer, and then I move on. I mean, the Pine Sol commercial took 3 months. That's very unusual for it to take that long. And I just kept a little bottle of Pine Sol in this little light well that I have, and I would give them more. I go, good morning, Pine Sol, and go on about my day, because I would want that to happen, but I can't spend my day worrying if it's going to happen. So I think for me, the competition that happens that's good is like any marketplace. You know, I'm talking also board women and business women of all types, entrepreneurs. You have to know in going that you have competition your field.
And you're touching on something I think that's also really important and very nice, is that you can't get your feelings hurt by
it. Oh, no. Yeah,
not everybody gets invited to every party, and it doesn't have to do with you.
Yeah. It has to do with so many variables that you have to keep that in mind.
Right. Good for you. Okay, so go back to the sisterhood speaking.
So the sisterhood speaking, I spoke on sisterhood in a way that helped women of all ages, because I speak to a lot of young girls, too, in school, but I found that audience to be from, they were teenage girls early, they're actually like 10 years old to 80. And so within that audience, I had a little something for everyone, because I wanted them to remember that women are each other's natural allies, that we get kind of pushed against each other in society, but we are natural allies.
Women used to be seen. I remember movies in the 40s, they were enemies.
Yeah.
And ready to slit each other's throat over some fool of a man,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, all of that kind of thing. And then I would take it a little further back to when, you know, women had to be their own community where men and women did separate things. Think back to cave days. You know, women in their cave, men in their cave, they come together and make little cave babies, and then who's taking care of them? The women, and, you know, the men are doing the hunting and gathering. All that kind of thing is a very real basis for even what we're doing today, to just understand where you are in your field, where you are amongst other women. And
your strength is and what
that's
your point is.
Like, I like being around strong, fabulous women. I don't want to be intimidated by them. I want to learn, and I want to be in that group. I want to run with the
pack. And that's right. You want to be one of them.
Yeah, right. But if you get intimidated by strong other women and you put them down, or you're trying to bring them down, that doesn't help you, I don't think.
No.
I just don't think it does, because you want to be around women who are doing big things and making differences in their profession.
Yes.
Yeah.
You shine better in the light of admiring others.
I think so.
I
do. And I think you shouldn't be afraid to let other women know they're doing a good job, or that, you know, something as simple as when women are walking down the street and you can tell she put a little time in her outfit and she's got a tag sticking out.
Yes.
Tap her and put the tag down for her.
Oh, you know what I mean? It's just, I say hi, Minnie Pearl. Yeah, I know,
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Just let's get that tag down, or
do
can I pull your sweater down? You know, because she put time in that outfit.
Yes.
You know,
sometimes
she wanted to look good.
Sometimes you see down the streets here a little old lady.
Oh,
I think I'm starting to qualify, but who is walking with difficulty, and she's, you know, a little bit hunched, but she is wearing purple slacks and a lavender top and a purple beret and gloves, and I think
she
thought about that.
That's right.
It's a wonderful thing. How has this, have you heard from any of these girls that you've spoken to, do you know?
You know, I do hear from some over the years, some on Facebook, but some I see, like, I'll see around the city and go, oh my God, I remember I met you when I was in junior high and this. And so you hear how you affected them sometimes. It's great. A young man came to me and he said, you know what? And this was at the Giants game. He said, you know what? You really helped me. And I said, really? He said, yeah. And I get a lot of Pine Sol, so I wasn't sure what he was talking about. He said, yeah, you came to my I was in jail because I did a program called Each One, Reach One, uh-huh. where we go in and we teach kids to write a play, a one-act play and metaphor, good. And then they bring in professional actors, and we act out their play, and they get to direct. Well, that's incredibly empowering, especially for these kids who have a lot to lose at that point. Yeah. To strike, some of them have really heavy things going on and family issues. And he said, when you came in and you acted on my play and I got to tell you what to do and you did it so good because I realized I could write. And he said, now he's got a family and he's writing and he's mentoring. Oh. And I'll tell you, I was almost crying at the Giants game. You know, it was so great because you just, every now and then you get a glimpse of what your work has done. And a lot of women from the Sister Speak keep in contact and,
They write to you?
They email me. They stay in contact on Facebook. It's awesome.
So I have a question because I'm about love letters.
Okay.
And we're just moving right into it.
Yes.
If you were, do you ever write to people?
Yeah, I respond.
I know life is busy, but yeah, I mean, do you on your own just start a letter to somebody?
Not very often. Only because you can't know what your gifts are to someone until they tell you what they are in a way.
Oh, that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
But what about their gifts to you? So this is what I want to ask you about.
Oh.
If you were to write one right now, who would it be to? I mean, I already want to write to four people in your life. So.
I would always have to write a love letter to Mary Yudocides, who started my career.
Yes, that's what I would think.
She pulled me aside and she said to me, I didn't take improv, like I said, on purpose. I was very planning to be a very serious actress, but I'm very funny.
Yes.
Everyone in my family is funny, so I never thought I'd get paid to be funny. Honestly, it never occurred to me. And she pulled me aside and she said, you know, she said, you have an obligation to share your talent. And I'm thinking, What does that even mean, right? She said, no, you're really good. And she said, and I want you to get serious about this and buckle down. And I was thinking, I mean, I was in high school. I don't know.
You weren't ready to be given a responsibility?
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't really see my talent as a responsibility. I saw something I wanted to do and I was frivolous about it.
By the way, that's a really good point.
It's
talent
really
does have responsibility.
It does, and I didn't realize that. And she really hunkered me down and set me down and pushed me in a positive way. And I just would always write her a love letter.
Have you ever written to her?
In cards over the years because very good friends to this very day. And so,
but
yes.
Does she know in words that exact thing
yes.
that you just said?
Oh, my goodness,
nice.
Yes. Over and over again. Because I feel like she was the one who made me realize how much not only did I love what I do, but that the response was good. And then I was really pushed by that. And my mother always told me that I could do anything I wanted.
Now, are your parents still living?
No, not at all. My mom died in 93, 20 years ago. After the Pine Sycamore, she got to see it for about 2 weeks and she passed away. I know, right? So, but it was good. She knew I was on my way and that it was a good thing. And so
she was leaving you without having to worry about
that's
you.
That's right. And that felt really great.
Now, sometimes a love letter to a parent who's no longer here is a really gorgeous thing to catch that parent up.
Yeah.
And then who do you send it to?
Those kind of things, I think if I was really going to
if you were to put it in your own handwriting.
Yeah.
Which will be worth gold someday in history books.
I'd be more inclined to perhaps put in a frame in a sunny place.
Oh, that's very nice.
I don't know. That's that light that is provided by, you know, by the universe to me would be a place to put it so that there was always light on it.
So could you send it, for example, I like the idea of writing a love letter to a parent who's been hugely encouraging and the strength we needed, and then sending it to our children.
Oh, yeah. You know, I share a lot with my kids, and they know.
I mean, I'm writing to you, but I'm going to send this. What are your children's names?
Kelvin is my son, and Cassandra is my daughter.
But I'm sending it to Kelvin and Cassandra.
That is an excellent point. Now, I share stories with them. That's how I continue it on, but I like that.
There's something in your handwriting.
I might have to do that.
That's going to be found by your great-grandchildren.
Yeah.
And they're going to know something about their heritage. I think when we find letters from our own past, and we see what strength and beauty and brilliance we come from, isn't that an encouragement?
It is, and you just reminded me of something.
What?
I found a letter that I wrote to my mother when I was a teenager.
Tell me.
And she found it probably about 4 or 5 months before she passed away. And it was a letter I wrote in junior high telling her how much I loved her and that I love spending time with her and that she found it incredibly embarrassing. If she had written that to her mother, she would have been embarrassed.
Why?
And she asked, I think it's a generational thing, that kind of admittance of that kind of open sort of love and praise. And she said, are you embarrassed to read this? I go, no, not at all, because it said all the things I feel about her. You know, that I loved her.
But she kept it.
Of course she kept it. And that's the telling thing, right?
Right.
And I was glad that she shared with me, because she kind of put it away as like, oh my God, how mushy is that? Or how,
oh,
I think
mushy,
she was a little
yes.
mushy or just kind of corny maybe, or just something that she wouldn't admit that's a big emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And when she read it back to me, I think she expected me to be kind of like, oh, I can't believe I wrote that. Because, you know, junior high is a tumultuous time anyway.
Yeah.
But I was totally serious. And I was able to tell her to her face that, no, Mom, I loved all the things you did for me. And I thanked her on her deathbed for bringing me to San Francisco from Indianapolis. And just many things, you know, that I got to say to her. And one of them was in a letter. And she did keep it. And I'm sure I have it in her cremation box.
Good.
I kept all that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's another thing about people keeping letters. And when they, okay, it's interesting. I'm absolutely stammering here because I don't consider this too often.
Mm-hmm.
The mush factor.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, that does rear its little head.
It does. It does.
And what is that? You say generation.
Uh-huh.
I have a feeling it's more serious than that.
I would say so, because I think, you know, there was a generation of children who were raised to be afraid of their parents. And maybe this is a cultural thing, but that was very true in the Black community.
Okay, so if you write a letter like that, I'm trying to understand it.
Sure.
You're putting yourself on an equal level somehow. You're the praiser. You're giving praise. To someone who has been culturally above you, you know.
Maybe that's part of it.
It does kind of even out the playing field,
doesn't
it?
It kind of does, because it levels you and says,
yes.
You know, I love you because of this,
and I get to, and I get
that,
to,
and get to say it.
Right.
That's a good way to think about it.
I get to condone you. I get to approve.
Yeah, right.
And who are you to approve or not?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Well,
but I think in the end, I think she was very humbled by it and appreciative that I was able to say it to her.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, so the lesson here is, no matter how old you are,
mm-hmm.
you're entitled to be the one who approves.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and should.
Yeah. And you should, because when you become a parent yourself, you take things that your parents did that you do want to do, and you take things that your parents did and you don't want to do them.
Right.
So, you know, you do have approval, and you do have things you want to pass on. So it's a good message, you know, and I make sure my kids know a lot about my past. Like, who was I before I was your mom?
Oh, good.
Right? Like, they know so many things.
That would make a great letter.
Yeah. And
I mean, I'm stuck on handwriting.
Yeah.
Because I think when people find that later.
And I'm a lot more likely to write it than to type it, by the way.
Good.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't type it.
Okay.
I'd probably be the type who would write it.
Good.
Yeah. Because those, to me, that kind of emotion, it doesn't translate to typewriter as much or to keyboard as much.
I agree. You know, when you look at handwriting,
mm-hmm.
we had a handwriting analyst here, and you would believe, of course, but what is in your handwriting is absolutely you.
It is.
Everybody has Lucid or Bright on that computer.
Yeah.
Nobody's got your handwriting. And what
That's
it says about you is huge, and you can't run from it.
No.
You can change your handwriting. The same. Okay. Well, thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh, it's
been
pleasure.
Such a pleasure. And if there's anything else you ever want to share and come back and do another one, please do.
You know, that could happen, Janet.
You never know.
Onward and upward.
You never know.
That's
yes,
right.
Onward and upward. Thank you, dear.
Thank you.
Well, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter is a special occasion. Until next time, bye-bye.